Karel Gramáš earned his place in history as the first Prime Minister of Czechoslovakia, but his political career spanned more than four turbulent decades. In today's edition of Czechs in History, Chris Johnston looks at a life that included a death sentence, an assassination attempt, and the birth of a new state.
Karel Gramáš is perhaps best known for the villa he built overlooking Prague that is now the official residence of the Czech Prime Minister, and as the first holder of that position under the first Czechoslovak Republic. But he was also one of the dominant Czech politicians in the dying decades of the Austro-Hungarian Empire during World War I and right up until his death in 1937 at the age of 76. There is, nonetheless, the unmistakable impression that the rich, handsome Karel Gramáš never really made the full transition to the more popular politics of the first Czechoslovak Republic. Martina Lustigová is the author of a recent biography of Karel Gramáš.
He was elected when he was 30, and until his death he stayed in politics. So he is one of the most important politicians of first Czechoslovak Republic. We know that he was the first Czechoslovak prime minister. After that, he was only MP, only a chairman of his National Democrats. But he was always important politician for the Czechoslovak people.
While some of his ideas and warnings, such as the dangers for the rest of Europe of a Bolshevik-ruled Soviet Union, and the flaws of party politics seem vindicated after his death, others, such as the pre-World War I blueprint for a Slavic federation dominated by Russia, gained little with age. Martina Lustigová again.
First of all, he was really naive. He had many ideas, for example, a big Slovene empire or something else, and he didn't see that some of his ideas are bad and unbelievable and so on. He always thought, the people do not understand me. He didn't see mistakes on his side, but he saw only mistakes on people's side, on the other side.
Karel Gramáš was born into a rich family in Vysoké nad Jizerou, in the far northeast of Bohemia. His father had built up a prosperous construction business and textile factory. He was the only one of five children to survive to school age. Thanks to the family's riches, Karel Gramáš was able to travel widely, study law in Berlin, and continue his studies in Paris and later London. While studying in Vienna in 1887, he met for the first time with Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk. The following year, they helped to form a group called the Realists. The short-lived movement decided at the end of 1890 to throw in their lot with the established Young Czech Political Party, which called for the more active pursuit of Czech rights within an Austrian-Hungarian empire which favoured German and Hungarian speakers. Part of the deal was the promise of three seats in the Vienna Parliament. Karel Gramáš was duly elected in March 1891. For Gramáš, a more momentous event had already occurred a year earlier, his first trip to Russia and a meeting that was to change his life.
This first journey to Russia was really, really important for Karel Gramáš because he met there his future wife, Nadežda Nikolaevna Abrikosova. Nadežda was married. So it was a really, really big problem for Karel Gramáš and Nadežda. He had to divorce, and this took 10 years. 10 years to be divorced and to marry Karel Gramáš. He went to Russia really often, and he loved Russia. He loved Russia's nature and so on. He built also his weekend house, we can say, but it was not some small cottage. It was a really big house. And he spent in Russia before the First World War almost every summer, almost every holiday when he was MP.
In the Vienna Parliament, Karel Gramáš quickly made an impact despite his youth. He was an eloquent speaker in German, the language of the Vienna Parliament. On the main issue of the day, the question of how to reform the multilingual and cultural empire, Gramáš' answer was for a more federal arrangement in which the Czechs would play a leading role as the most advanced Slavic nation. This, he argued, would strengthen, not weaken the empire. He did not call for the replacement of the monarchy and was only converted to a republic when it appeared inevitable at the end of World War I. The young Czechs took a more moderate line in seeking to reform the empire rather than overthrow it. Nonetheless, on the eve of World War I, Karel Kramář was working in secret on plans for a Slav federation. The idea was that this federation would encompass Poland, Bulgaria, Serbia, Montenegro, the Czech lands and Russia. It was envisaged as a constitutional monarchy headed by the Russian Tsar, with a council and parliament in which Russian representatives had a majority. The fact that this idea would clearly not be accepted by the Poles did not seem to matter to him. Karel Kramář had developed a deep dislike for them, in any case, which almost rivaled that for the Germans. Karel Kramář hoped that the federation would be realised with Russian victory in World War I. That hope for victory failed to materialise. Instead, Karel Kramář, by this time one of the leading members of the Czech resistance at home, cooperating with Masaryk and Edvard Beneš abroad, had the Austrian authorities to thank for pushing him to the forefront of Czech national aspirations. He was arrested in Prague by police in 1915 and put on trial together with the future Czechoslovak finance minister, Alois Rašín, for treason. It was perceived at home not as the trial of a few leading politicians, but that of the whole Czech nation. The charged were found guilty and sentenced to death. Fortunately, the verdicts coincided with the death of the long-time emperor, Franciszek Józef, and the unwillingness of his successor to start his reign with executions to his name. Kramář was released in mid-1917, but only after signing a declaration that he would abstain from political activity. That soured his later relations with Rašín, who refused to give such an undertaking. Kramář was nonetheless a national hero and symbol of resistance. As such, he was elected the chairman of the National Committee in 1918 as the war drew to a close, and was chosen by domestic and foreign resistance leaders to be the country's first prime minister, at the same time as Masaryk was selected as president. But top positions in power only succeeded in distancing the former friends from each other even further.
In the beginning of the first Czechoslovak Republic, Masaryk, became the first Czechoslovak president. Karel Kramář became the first Czechoslovak prime minister. It looked like they will be friends and colleagues in the Republic, but it was not true. When Kramář was in Paris in a peace conference, he wanted also Czech boys and Czech men to go to Russia to fight towards the Bolshevism. He wanted to help White Army in Russia, and Masaryk didn't want to. Masaryk also writes with our foreign minister, Edvard Beneš, and they criticized Karel Kramář very, very much.
In January 1990, an attempt to assassinate Kramář was made by the 17-year-old son of a National Socialist Member of Parliament. The Prime Minister was only lightly wounded by the bullet, which was braked by the heavy winter coat he was wearing and a holder containing his money and papers. A joke went round that the thickness of Kramář's wallet had saved him. The Paris Peace Conference of 1990 was a personal disaster for Karel Kramář. He left in January as Prime Minister and returned as a disillusioned backbencher. At home, local elections in June were a victory for the socialist parties, with Kramář's National Democrats getting just under 10% of the vote. His government resigned, with the still absent Prime Minister told of the fact only later. At the peace conference, he had played less of a role than he had expected and did not understand the need for the patient committee work that Edvard Beneš excelled at. From then on, while Karel Kramář was still head of a party, albeit one that was identified with rich Czech industrialists and appeared increasingly unable to win broad popular support, his greater ambitions would be frustrated.
We can say that he was the first Czechoslovak prime minister, but he wanted to be also the president of Czechoslovak Republic, but he only wanted to be because it was unbelievable, it was impossible, because nobody else wanted Karel Kramář to be Czechoslovak president as well.
In later years, Karol Kramář's consistent desire for party politics to take second place to national goals, his absolute opposition to Bolshevism and a resurgent Nazi Germany, caused him to praise Benito Mussolini's fascist Italy. But Martina Lustigová rejects the fascist label being attached to Kramář.
I can't say that he admired fascism. He only said that if there is something good, we can borrow it. If there is something good for the nation, we can borrow it and we can work with it. But I don't want to say that he admired fascism or that he was fascist. No.